Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Steve Frampton, and you're listening to The Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. In a moment, I will be welcoming our guest, Alan McRae, and we will be speaking about spiritual alchemy, which is going to be really very interesting. I've spoken with Alan before, and I'm really excited to hear what she has to share with us this evening. But before we get started, I'd like to welcome my co-hosts. Maureen, how are you this evening?
I'm doing okay. Thank you so much, Steve. And I'm looking forward to the show. Absolutely.
She's a great guest, very knowledgeable, and yes, we'll learn a lot.
You're a great host.
Oh, thank you. I try. Sure. Well, so, Maureen, could you tell us about your work?
Okay, I will. Yeah. Tarot is a symbolic record of human experience. I kind of leave it at that because I do utilize the tarot as my main tool. And I'm an empath, psychic, intuitive consultant. I really particularly love helping people with spiritual development. And I work amongst my lovely co-host and handsome co-host at PsychicAccess.com.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Maureen. It's great to have you with us, as always.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, Brenda, how are you today?
I'm doing good. I'm doing real good. I hope you don't. My poor dog's having a panic attack. But other than that, I'm doing good. And I work with all you lovely people at PsychicAccess.com too.
Well, we love working with you, Brenda. Can you tell us a little about your work?
I'm a predictive psychic. I use the crystal ball and the tarot and the playing cards, and I specialize in dates, times, and places.
Wonderful. I know you're very accurate, Brenda, and
it's always
great to have you on the show. And Stephen, how are you?
I'm doing fine, my friend. How are you this evening?
Very well. Very well, thank you. I always enjoy our Thursday evenings.
So do I. I've learned to look forward to them when the week starts.
Good. Well, Stephen, can you share with our listeners a little detail about your work?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I work with all of you ladies and gentlemen over at Psychic Access. And what we do over there is very much like a type of alchemy, which is one reason I'm so excited to hear your guest tonight. You know, I use the tarot and astrology to take the dross of your life, the lead of your life, and to spin whatever kind of gold is available there. Sometimes there's enough gold to make a tapestry, a suit of armor. Sometimes there's only enough gold to make a pendant. But the gold is always there, and we endeavor to find it using tarot and astrology.
Well, I love the way you described that, Stephen. Thank you. And I know you're like-minded, and you'll enjoy the interview with Alan this evening.
Been looking forward to it.
Thank you. I'll tell our guests a little bit about Alan before we get started. Now, Alan is a wonderful person. She began reading tarot in 71 after discovering her first deck in an occult shop in San Francisco, California. She joined the American Tarot Association and is a recognized certified tarot reader. And she's given a lot of readings online and been a guest on a number of radio shows, most recently ours this evening. She's also got a lot of knowledge about hermeticism and alchemy, so that's the subject we'll be discussing this evening. Well, Alan, welcome to the show. Alan, can you hear me? Hello? Oh gosh, I do hope we have Alan with us. Can you guys hear me? Stephen, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
I can hear you. Fine.
What are you talking? Poor thing. Maybe it's on the other. It might be on our executive producers. And
Let's see.
No, there's something here.
Yeah, I'm hoping that Alan is with us because she's fascinating. Well, Doug is saying that she's not available.
Well, I guess I can't pretend.
Well, we'll have to talk about alchemy for her then. Well, let's see what you guys have to say. While Doug works on trying to connect with Alan, I know Alan relatively well. I know a fair amount about alchemy because I have studied alchemy in some detail. But we'll talk about it whilst we see if she's available. You know how we always think of alchemy and we think of men with long white beards in their attics in the 1500s and 1600s with chemistry equipment trying to transmute lead into gold. Well, I learned that in actual fact. Oh, Alan, are you there?
Yes, I am, Steve. How are you?
Oh. I'm great, Alan. I'm so glad that you're with us. We thought you weren't going to be available, so we were starting to talk about alchemy, but I'm so glad that you're here.
Oh, yes. I was by the phone the whole time, and for some reason, it just disconnected the first time. But why am I on now? So that's all that matters.
Great. Well, I told our guests, our listeners, and my co-hosts a little bit about your work, and I started to introduce the subject of alchemy, saying that most people think of men with white beards conducting experiments in their attics in the 1600s. And although we know that we can transmute lead into gold, that there's much more to the subject allegorically. So I wanted to ask, Alan, if you could start by just telling us a little bit about alchemy so that we can introduce the subject.
Well, you're absolutely right, Steve. Alchemy is kind of a fuzzy concept in the mind of most people today. You know, often it's thought of as an antiquated method of transforming lead into gold, and was utter folly. There might be an idea that spirituality has something to do with it, but a clearer connection usually is not made. I think the main reason why alchemy is such a fog is that it's a complicated subject. And the records were coded to protect the sacred from the profane or from the uninitiated. And the last reason being that many of the records were simply destroyed. The thing to remember about alchemy, probably if we were to assign a key word, the key word would be transformation. Alchemy is about changing one thing into another with the intention to perfect or evolve the subject at hand. And I think why alchemy is so important is because even though it dates back thousands of years, it's relevant today because it has universal principles that apply to all levels of the physical, mental, and spiritual realms. These principles are also known as the perennial philosophy, which is a term that comes up in alchemy and probably nowhere else. The perennial philosophy has three universal principles. The first is that higher levels of reality determine our existence and can only be grasped by the higher faculties of our mind and spirit. The second principle is that there is an undying divine essence at the heart of everything. And in alchemy, this is known as the quintessence, or the fifth element. And the third principle of the perennial philosophy is that all human beings possess the capacity to perceive these separate levels of reality, and that the application of this truth is the goal and purpose of our existence. So I think that about sums up what alchemy is. It is about changing one thing into another thing with the intention to perfect or evolve the subject at hand. And that can be applied in many different ways, of course.
Wonderful, thank you. I know that most people think of metals, don't they? They think of transmuting lead into gold, but they don't realize necessarily, and I didn't realize originally until you told me, that in actual fact alchemy is about the purification of anything, and particularly the purification of our souls.
Yes, and this is probably the most important aspect of alchemy that people have trouble dealing with, or they have trouble understanding. I think certainly in the beginning, alchemy was about working with the metals, but it also focused on, the alchemists also made themselves a part of the experiment. The spiritual work in alchemy focuses on purifying or rectifying the first matter within, which is what I just spoke about, that underlying divine essence at the heart of everything. And it thereby perfects the soul of the alchemist. Just as quantum physics understands now that just observing a quantum experiment can affect its outcome, so did the alchemists understand that in order to create purity, the alchemist had to be pure too. The alchemist was an ingredient in his own work. Ora et labora, which means pray and work in Latin, was important to the alchemist. They actually had something called an oratorium or a curtain chamber in their laboratories where they could meditate and pray and be pure. It's likened, I think, to kitchen alchemy or the kitchen alchemist. We all know that a good cook is a good cook because they love their work and they approach their cooking, their recipe, with an attitude of purity. Let's keep the counters clean. Let's disinfect everything before we cook. Let's make sure that the food is fresh or organic, and the fresher the ingredients, and the more lovingly the cook puts the ingredients together, the more successful the dinner will be. And in so doing, the cook gains, if I can use this analogy, so much, pleasure from that experience. And I don't know that the alchemists in the Middle Ages experienced pleasure through their trials and tribulations around the furnace, but they certainly gleaned spiritual discipline in their work.
Now, can you tell us a little about some of the most famous alchemists that did work with the transmutation of lead into gold?
Yes, it's very surprising, actually, that, we all hear that gold was actually never produced, but actually several alchemists claimed that they did produce gold. I can certainly tell you about some of the major alchemists, and they all have very interesting backgrounds. Abu Musa Jabir ibn Hayyan, and I won't test you on that name, but he was one of the very famous Muslim Arabian alchemist, and he was really a meticulous alchemist. He codified everything, though, to the point that it was a long time before anyone could understand what he was talking about. He did this, of course, to keep his work secret. And his name is where we get the word gibberish from today. Abu Musa Jabir became gibberish today in today's vernacular. St. Thomas Aquinas was one of the world's greatest philosophers and a prolific writer in the fields of religion, philosophy, and alchemy. And most people don't realize that he was an alchemist. And he had a mystical experience in December of 1273. And apparently he never wrote a word, and what he was writing at the time was just stopped mid-sentence. Roger Bacon became Europe's leading alchemist, and he worked with gunpowder and powerful tinctures and elixirs. Bacon produced the Opus Majus, the major work, which we know it as, which summarized all branches of science at that time, and proposed that they were all part of a single true philosophy that had been lost to mankind. Even though Roger Bacon was a monk, he was always in trouble with the church. And when he died in 1294, his fellow monks nailed all his books in his library to their shelves and left them there to rot unopened. Giordano Bruno gave public lectures on the principles of the Emerald Tablet. And he portrayed the universe as a living presence. He even asserted, if you can believe this, that the sun was the center of the cosmos and went so far as to claim that the universe was infinite and contained many other worlds that harbored intelligent life. The man was really ahead of his time. The priests of the Inquisition caught up to him in about 1592, I think, and finally, after his grueling experience with the Inquisition, they burned him at the stake. Paracelsus, as one of the greatest alchemists of all time, is considered one of the founders of modern medicine because he began using chemicals, or as we call them today, drugs, in the treatment of disease. And his hybrid of alchemy and medicine, which he called iatrochemistry, became very popular in the 16th and 17th centuries. Now, you asked about alchemists who actually created gold. And the best story, the two stories I have that follow, are Nicholas Flamel and Sir Isaac Newton. Nicholas Flamel, who was memorialized in the Harry Potter books, if you will recall, was an alchemist who, he was just a bookstore owner, actually, and he suddenly became very rich, and he gave huge sums of money and property away to charity. And he claimed that the source of his great inheritance was from the ability to produce gold from lead. And his story is really a fascinating tale. He received a mysterious book from a Jewish priest, and the book was written in strange languages, and after he, and with the help actually of a linguist in France, he was able to decode the book and became fabulously wealthy with his alchemical gold. He lived to be, first of all, he did wonders for France, and he donated many hospitals and schools for children, and he just gave all of his money away because he felt that alchemical gold was, could be the source of all evil, if not careful. So he just did good things with his money. The story is also interesting because after Nicholas Flamel died at a ripe old age, his nephew, who inherited this mysterious book, demonstrated that he could also make gold out of lead in front of a French nobleman. And word got around, and he was arrested, and the nobleman wanted his secrets and killed him, actually, for his secrets, and built his own laboratory, and, of course, failed to make chemical gold. And after the nobleman died, the book mysteriously disappeared. However, there are pages of it that you can still find at FlamelCollege.org, which is a site I recommend. One alchemist that most people are not even aware was an alchemist was Sir Isaac Newton. And he's famous for his master achievement, mathematical principles of natural philosophy. Usually referred to as the Principia, which is probably more familiar to our listeners, and considered the single most influential book ever written, actually. Sir Isaac Newton was considered always a scientist, but he considered himself first and foremost an alchemist and focused more on alchemy than any other subject. Newton claimed, as a matter of fact, that his inspiration for the laws of light and the theory of gravity sprang from his alchemical work. And he did, as a matter of fact, in his records, record that he produced gold from lead. And he said something real simple about it, like, I reckon this is the goal of alchemy, or something to that effect. Anyway, all of his alchemical books were not considered worthy of publishing, but they do reside, I believe, now in the Hebrew Museum in Jerusalem, or somewhere in Israel. So those are the two that I know of, or that claimed to have produced alchemical gold. But as a matter of fact, there were worries about alchemical gold in Europe. I hope I'm not rambling, Steve. Stop me.
No, this is fantastic, and I'm really glad that you're going down this route, actually, Aline. I know that you're very psychic, but you were reading my mind, because I wanted to ask, you know, why was it so dangerous to be an alchemist?
Yes.
Because I think that leads us to an understanding of how some of the metaphysical knowledge that we're also interested in has been kept secret, really, for a very long time.
Yes, well, it was dangerous because it was, you know, this work of the occult, it was dangerous on many levels, Steve. So let me just go where I was heading first, and then I'll try to address other parts of your question. It was dangerous to the nobility of Europe at the time because they were afraid that so many alchemists were producing gold that it would throw off their monetary systems, because at that time, money and wealth was actually based on the amount of gold that you had in hand, very, you know, right there in your hand. They didn't worry about it too much after that because they realized that they could print money. Also, there were people like the Puffers who would claim that they made gold. Puffers, I should clarify, were folks that actually didn't make gold, but they pretended that they did. And they called them Puffers because they would sit in front of their furnaces and fan and fan and fan and create these very hot furnaces because they thought only heat would create the gold. The Puffers would produce sort of a false gold or a fool's gold, if you will. And that could also get them killed, burned at the stake, or have their heads cut off at the guillotine. The church during the Renaissance regarded alchemy as an occult practice. The alchemist, like Giordano Bruno, for example, who claimed that the sun was the center of the earth and the universe was infinite and contained other worlds and harbored intelligent life, was totally against the doctrine of the church at that time. And the church was, of course, everything in Europe. It was the law in Europe. So anyone who was practicing alchemy or witchcraft or herbology or anything that could be considered an occult practice were burned at the stake on a regular basis. And there's an interesting story to this, because the alchemists always had to work with women. And this is another thing that most people don't understand about alchemy. Alchemy is very much a dance of male and female energies, and whatever happens in the laboratory in terms of the coagulation of the metals and the separation of the metals also happens between the alchemist and their assistant. The women were called moon sisters, and they were very, very much in danger should they be caught in this practice, even more so than the men, because there was so much fear of witchcraft in those days. Witches and their cats, unfortunately, were burned at the stake. The cats were thrown alive in baskets in the fire, which is just horrible to think about.
I can't believe they would burn cats. Sorry, I'm not not worried about the witches, but I have four cats, Ellen, and that bothers me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear what you said, Stephen.
I said I can't believe they would burn cats.
Oh, I know.
I'm not being cruel about the women, but I have four cats.
Oh my gosh! Well, and here's what happened, Stephen. Here's the interesting part. There were so many cats lost during during the Inquisition and these public burnings that the rat population exploded, which contributed to the spread of the plague or the Black Death. And ironically, it was the alchemists that were asked to help in this situation. The very people who had caused the Black Death turned to the alchemists for their tinctures and their elixirs and their medicine to help cure not only the plague, but also all the other things and diseases that were spreading across Europe at that time. So I think that would probably cover the dangers of alchemy, and I think the dangers of alchemy really drove so many alchemists underground in their work to avoid conflict with the church, to keep their head on their shoulders, and to avoid the being burned alive. The alchemists deliberately, they either went into hiding completely, or they deliberately concealed their work in Christian terminology. In other words, they substituted Christian terminology for alchemical terminology. For instance, the word Christ was often used to refer to the philosopher's stone. And like I said,
And that's interesting. That's interesting, because I want to ask you about the philosopher's stone. And before that, I want to ask you about the fact that these alchemists were basically vilified by the church and by the state, because they were in effect investigating something that threatened the wealth and power or control and authority of the church and the the royalty in most, if not all, cases at that time. And it makes me pretty sure that, in effect, it was about preventing people from understanding spiritual truth, understanding metaphysics, and almost hoarding knowledge to retain control. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree with that. Alchemy goes back thousands and thousands of years to the ancient Egyptians, and they believed that a god of theirs called Thoth or Thoth, sometimes it's pronounced, or Thoth, T-O-T-H, we don't really know how to pronounce the name, but he was a very important god to the Egyptians because he was credited with all forms, teaching all forms of culture, mathematics, language, writing, agriculture, and certainly the perennial philosophy, which came to the Egyptians via the pillars of Hermes. Thoth was called Hermes by the Greeks, and Hermes became Hermes Trismegistus, or Hermes Thrice Great. And this information came to the Egyptians, according to the oral tradition, 12,000 years ago before the great flood inundated the world. And actually, the pillars are described in scrolls and were actually studied. We have a historical record that the pillars existed because we have historical record that they were studied firsthand by Alexander the Great. Manetho, who was a Greek record keeper or scribe, and Herodotus, a very famous Greek historian. The pillars of Hermes also contained hundreds of priceless manuscripts, one known as the Emerald Tablet, bearing a succinct summary of the Thothian philosophy. And I think that's what you're getting at. Steve, the Thothian philosophy is all about how the world was created and how we are co-creators and how alchemy is a practice of co-creation. The first premise of the Emerald Tablet is as above, so below, as we've all heard so many times if we've studied metaphysics at all. The second is that God in the Emerald Tablet is called the One Mind, which is so important today in New Thought as it was to the ancients. And I love what the Emerald Tablet says about the pattern of God, if you will, was in his word, and the pattern was spread all over the universe. The earth and the planets. And that's why we can explain and how we can explain the correspondences that exist between what is in the below and what is in the above, and why there are correspondences to all things Saturnian or Mercurian or Venusian, etc., etc., because the pattern exists and we can recognize it and identify it, and once we learn to do that, we can co-create with it. And I think of all the secret, sacred messages of alchemy, those messages were the most threatening to the state and to the religion, which were one and the same of the time, of the Middle Ages, of the Dark Ages.
Well, it's fascinating, and you've got an amazing knowledge of the whole history of the subject. And we're going to take a short commercial break, and then afterwards I'd like to ask you about how we correlate, in effect, what we read nowadays about the law of attraction and alchemy, or specifically spiritual alchemy, and then also to ask you about the correlations, and specifically correlations with tarot, which I know is a great passion of yours.
All right, I'll be here.
Wonderful. We'll be back in just a moment after the break.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com?
Well, welcome back, Alan. I want to ask you now to help our listeners and me to make a connection between the law of attraction that we read so much about at the moment and spirituality or spiritual alchemy.
The law of attraction and spiritual alchemy. Well, Stephen,
because I'm thinking, maybe you could give me a little example. Yeah, well, I was thinking that the alchemists were punished, vilified for pursuing this knowledge, how to purify themselves, how to purify their souls, and therefore heighten their ability to make things happen in the seemingly physical world. And I loved what you were saying about the spiritual purification, that the alchemist is part of the process. So in other words, if you don't work on yourself, you're not necessarily going to get the results in the outer world that you might want. And we read so much about the law of attraction, and there are so many books out there that tell us the importance of visualizing what it is we want to create, etc. But they don't explain what you explained, which is we have to purify ourselves, and that spirit or the universe or God, whichever term we wish to use, rewards us with greater alchemical ability or a greater ability to manifest when we are purifying ourselves, our spirits, our souls.
Yes, Steve, and that is very well put. And I can speak to that subject now because I understand more clearly. I think probably one of the most practical applications I can think of that has come up in my life over and over again. I'm a tarot reader, as you know, and many times most people will come to me, most women especially, when they want a reading, and they will ask, why haven't I found a really wonderful man in my life? It always turns out that there is something about the woman herself that is attracting the wrong kind of man. I know this is common because I went through the same phase. I can speak personally to it, where I had some I had a lot of things to work through in my life that I hadn't worked through and I wasn't interested in working through, and therefore I kept meeting people that were harmful to me, and I was meeting those people because I was harmful to myself. And Steve, I think this is the crux of the matter. When you start to work, when an individual starts to work on themselves and picking apart all the areas in their characters that are not working for them, discerning what is working for them and what is not working for them, and understanding that they can, through using tools like visualization and working with affirmations and being conscious daily of our thoughts, words, and deeds, knowing that all of our thoughts especially radiate out into the ether, if you will, and attract light. Then we begin to see, when we see changes in ourselves, we begin to see changes outside of ourselves. When we've cleaned up our act, in other words, we can see that our life changes for the better in the world around us. I think another classic example of this is the program Alcoholics Anonymous. They understand this concept that there is a higher self, and they aspire to develop the higher self and trust in the higher self and believe in the higher self and develop the higher self. And when that happens, all of the issues around addiction and all of the ramifications of addiction fall away a lot easier. So I hope that addresses how it works, how like attracts like. When we become better people, we are able to manifest a greater and truer reality for ourselves.
I love it. I love it, Alan. I love the hermetic expression, as above, so below. But I also believe that we should be saying something along the lines of as above, no, as within, so without. In other words, the work that we do on ourselves, our inner work, gives us a great ability to create beyond ourselves and in the world.
Absolutely, Steve. You know, one of the things, another practice that I've had a great deal of experience with is just saying over and over again when, you know, is that my life is abundant, and I say it in the present, that these affirmations need to be spoken out loud and believed with all of our heart. That emotion that we carry with our affirmation gives that affirmation power and strength.
Yes.
It really gives it. And so if we can just generate a feeling of gratitude and love and goodness in our
hearts. And really putting the energy and the passion into it. You know, I was talking with a friend who said to me, gosh, I know you've had a hard time financially. And I said, well, I have, but I'm so incredibly wealthy. And he looked at me like I was strange. And I said, no, I mean it. I'm so wealthy. I'm doing what I love. I'm no longer in a corporate role that I dislike. I'm doing what I find meaningful. I have four beautiful cats. I have great friends. I have a wonderful home. Yes, sometimes it's a challenge to find what I need to make the mortgage, but I'm doing what I'm passionate about in the world. I feel good. I sleep well. I'm able to do my yoga and to learn and study the things that I love, and I am in an incredible state of wealth. And money is a technicality. It will follow my passion and appreciation of the wealth that I have in this world. And I really believe that, Alan, I really do. And I want to ask you now about tarot, because I know that you have an enormous knowledge of tarot. And I know from my studies and also from my previous interactions with you that there's this incredible correlation between spirituality, alchemy, our ability to manifest, and these incredible metaphysical tools that we have access to, such as astrology, numerology, and tarot. So how can you explain for us, Alan, the correlation between our discussion about alchemy and the metals, lead, gold, silver, etc., copper, and this wonderful tool, tarot.
Well, boy, that's a big question. I think tarot is one of the most amazing tools that we have. I believe it speaks to us on so many different levels, right from paying the bills to, you know, having a bankrupt soul, if you will. And I think that according to the Brotherhood of Light tradition, tarot, the word, let me back up a little bit here. I'm thinking a little bit ahead of myself. Tarot is a word that has many, many times been associated with the word taroki in the etymology of the word tarot. Taroki, as you know, is a game that was played in the Renaissance, a card game, and much like trumps. It's a game of trumps. But in the Brotherhood of Light tradition, which comes from an Egyptian tradition, the word ta in ancient Egyptian means path, and ro means royal. So the word tarot or tarot means royal path. And so the initiations, according to our oral traditions, initiations into the mystery school were conducted in the Great Pyramid. And afterwards, the neophyte was led blindfolded to a subterranean chamber of the Great Sphinx, where images of the major arcanum were displayed in bas reliefs. And below each 22 major arcanum was an admonition, we call it, or a spiritual teaching that the initiate was to remember. As an aside, Dr. Robert Schock, who I traveled to Egypt with just over the holidays, he's a famous American geologist and the one who redated the Sphinx, an author of The Pyramid Code and The Forgotten Civilization, both great books, actually claims that there is a subterranean chamber beneath the Sphinx, the one that, well, we believe in the Brotherhood of Light tradition, was where the neophyte went after initiation into the major arcanum. So the tarot, probably in its ultimate interpretation, teaches us, gives us a path to ourselves, to understanding ourselves. It describes who we are as human beings, and it gives us a way or information, a pathway to discover our total self, to combine our consciousness with our subconscious, and to become total whole people and perfect people. And perfect being the adept, as is symbolized by the world in most decks. In our deck, the world is called the adept. And the adept is one who can manifest on all three planes, on the physical plane, on the astral or mental plane, and on the spiritual plane. An adept is one who can co-create on all those planes. And I do believe tarot is really a blueprint for arriving at that great achievement. Many, you know, most of us don't, but we give it our best shot.
Wonderful. It's wonderful. I mean, well, I know you've been using tarot for a long time. Can you give us a couple of examples of cards in probably, I presume, in the major arcana that explain certain steps in that process of spiritual purification, this this opportunity that enables us to become more spiritual, more of God, and therefore more powerful in our ability to create in the world, but to create not out of selfishness for ourselves, but to create in the way that wonderful alchemists did, creating to give and help others.
Yes. Well, I would be happy to do that. I gave an hour and a half speech one time on the Magus alone, and I'll start with the Magus. The Magus, referred to in most decks as the magician, of course, is Major Arcanum 1. And he is the first step towards spirituality. And he's the first step because that card symbolizes the beginning in our venture and can be likened to the first matter of alchemy. I don't know if you understand what first matter is. Maybe I should go back and explain first matter. The alchemical process is traditionally begun in the spring with what is called first matter. First matter is called prima materia in Latin, and it is one of the most confusing concepts in alchemy because it's considered everything and nothing at once. The Emerald Tablet calls first matter the one thing. The primordial chaos, if you will, the primordial soup of the universe, fashioned into material reality by the thoughts or words of the one mind. And we are all part of that one mind. We are like little computer terminals of the great computer in the sky, if you will. Or we can plug into electricity that doesn't exist really in that little plug in our wall that lights our lamps, but yet it's out there and we can plug into it. That's how we are connected to the one mind. We live, breathe, and move and exist within the one thing and the one mind that we co-create with. The Magus is like first matter. It is the energy of this first major arcanum that tells us that we lie within the realm of all possibilities. It is the stuff of God or the creative energy within which we live. The Magus is ruled by Mercury, the planet ruling our thoughts. And it is our thoughts that indeed mold and shape our personal existence, and it's global thoughts that mold and shape the conditions of the world. If we change our thoughts, we can change our lives. Today, quantum physics has demonstrated what metaphysicians have known for a long time, that it is that matter does not exist in and of itself in the universe, but rather emerges from a quantum foam or first matter and manifests according to consciousness. And if the Magus does not represent anything else, it represents consciousness. And this revelation is the basis of what today is referred to as new thought. But of course, it's actually not new thought. It's the wisdom of the ancients. The ancients knew that we can create and manifest with our thoughts by keeping them positive and present and by being aware constantly. And one of the key words for the Magus or the magician is vigilance, which means being constantly aware of not only your surroundings and the people in your surroundings, but of your thoughts, words, and deeds, because they are all so powerful, and they can all co-create, whether we think they are or not. So So that's how I would relate the maggots to alchemy as first matter. Veiled Isis, Arcanum 2, she's called the High Priestess in other decks, is just the opposite of the maggots, who is masculine and positive and or aggressive and represents the conscious mind. Veiled Isis represents the feminine principle, that is negative and or passive, and the subconscious mind. Mind you, I'm not trying to be sexist here. Positive and negative in this context means a lock and key system. In other words, you have to have a plug and a receptacle to deliver the electricity. In other words, all of us as men and women combine feminine and masculine, passive and aggressive, positive and negative traits. The Magus and Veiled Isis, or the Magician and the High Priestess together, symbolize the human condition. The one, Arcanum 1, cannot exist without the other, Arcanum 2. Carl Jung incorporated alchemy into his groundbreaking work by attempting to integrate the personality. And this integration, as he termed it, meant the balancing of the four personality types based on the humors of Hippocrates, which were based on the four elements, fire, water, air, and earth. And part of Jung's integration process is discovering the underlying subconscious personality and bringing it into consciousness. So it would be our job as humans to try to integrate our subconscious and conscious mind. Now, in the next card, which we call Isis Unveiled, and I've forgotten what it's called in other decks. What is she called? The Empress? The Empress, I think. The Empress is traditionally pregnant, correct? So in the Empress, in Arcanum 3, we have a combination of the consciousness and the subconsciousness, which creates a new something wonderful, new and different, that transcends the original two. The Strength card, we call it the Strength card. I think you call it the Strength card. In other traditions, it's called the Strength card. The Egyptians were very keen on separating the animal nature from the human nature. You know, we're born animals. We have animal appetites. We have a lizard brain with a flight or fright reaction, flight or fight reaction. And
do I have a lizard brain as well, Alan?
Pardon me?
Do I have a lizard brain as well?
I'm afraid we all do, Steve.
Oh.
And you know where we discover those? We discover those when we're in traffic.
I love talking about the third eye and the fact that certain lizards still have that visible third eye, but that ours went into the forehead or is behind the skull, but it still detects light. It's fascinating. Well, Alan, we're going to have you back on another show because we've only really just started to talk about your incredible knowledge of tarot, and you mentioned Egypt. We're all very passionate about Egypt as well, and we've run out of time, but I would like you to come back and tell us more about tarot and Egypt and the Church of Light. Would you be able to do that sometime?
Of course, I would love to.
You've been a wonderful, wonderful guest. This is one of those shows that I will listen to over and over because there's so much I can learn and memorize from what you've said.
Thank you so much, Steve. It's been a pleasure, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I want to thank you sincerely. I wish we had more time, but I wanted to just ask you very quickly before we do wrap up, can you tell our guests how they can contact you if they'd like to know more about your work?
They can contact me at the following email address, ali@light.org, and that's ali@light.org.
That's wonderful, Ali. And we also have a link to you with your information on our guest page. So on the psychicaccesstalkradio.com website, we have a guest page for all of our guests, and yours is there, so our listeners can contact you that way as well. And we will definitely have you back. I will be in touch, and I want to thank you so much for everything that you've shared with us this evening.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve, so much. Good night.
Good night, Ali. Thank you. Wow, that was absolutely fascinating, and I meant what I said. We've got to have Ali back because she's got so much knowledge to share. I'd even almost like to have a show just about the tarot and talking through each card of the major arcana, because I know that so many of you out there use tarot and want to learn more. So we'll definitely get Ali back. Now, I want to remind you that if you do want to contact Ali, you can go to her website. It's letstalktarot.wordpress.com. And I actually printed out all of the blogs that Ali put on there about tarot, and it was a great way of really solidifying my knowledge of the different cards in the major arcana. So I recommend you check that out. And I want to thank Ali for joining us. She's incredibly knowledgeable, and we will definitely have her back. I would like to ask you to stay tuned while I make a few announcements. And before we move to that part of the show during which we give you the free on-air readings with our gifted psychics, we'll have our interaction between the co-hosts. But do stay tuned for your free on-air reading, and I will announce the call-in number a little later in the show, so be sure to have your pen and paper ready. And if you were unable to catch our show last week or any of our previous shows, you'll find the recorded archive links at psychicaccesstalkradio.com under the Archives tab. And please feel free to circulate those links to your friends and family by email or by Facebook, however you like. We'd like to connect with as many people as possible, so do go ahead and share. If you'd like to learn more about psychic ability and all of these fascinating areas within the field of metaphysics and spirituality, go to our website psychicbloggers.com, and you'll find all kinds of information there, from psychic development to reincarnation, a mediumship, astrology, pretty much everything you could imagine. So make good use of that resource, psychicbloggers.com. And if you're interested in a reading from the best professional psychics on the internet, go to psychicaccess.com, where you'll find the best verified, accuracy tested psychics with their own unique gifts. Each of them has a detailed profile for you to review so that you can decide who can help you with the question or concern that you have at any point in time. And I'm very much involved in the recruitment of all of our psychics and readers. We have extremely high expectations. We only hire truly talented and really genuine people that want to serve spirit and make a difference in the world by helping others. So please do feel that you can contact us if you need some support or some insight. I want to thank Doug very genuinely as well. He is working hard behind the scenes to keep us running as our executive producer, and he's a great guy to work for and with, and takes good care of us. So thank you to you, Doug, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I also want to thank my co-hosts and let you know that all of the co-hosts here on Psychic Access Talk Radio are available at Psychic Access. So if you'd like a personal reading from any one of us, do visit us at psychicaccess.com. We'd love to hear from you. And if you haven't had a reading before, we offer a free 6-minute reading to all of our new members at psychicaccess.com. Now, if you have your own website, please remember that you can earn 50 cents a minute on every reading. All of the traffic that is referred via your website to psychicaccess.com. If you would like more information about that fantastic offer, please visit psychicaccess.com/webmasters. And again, if you like our show, please invite your friends to join us in the chat room to listen into Psychic Viewpoints. There's something for everyone, so spread the word. We really appreciate it. Now, I'm going to give you the call-in number. We're not going to take calls just yet. I'll tell you when we will, but here's the number for your reference. We'd love you to call in and benefit from the free readings. The number is 724-444-4851. That's 724-444-4851. And I want to say a special hello to our listener and good friend in the UK who downloads and listens to the radio show every Friday morning as she drives to work. And that said, I would like to move on to the section of the show in which we interact. And I want to ask Maureen, who's very interested in tarot. I know that you've worked with tarot for a long, long time, Maureen. What did you think about our guest?
Oh, she had so much knowledge. I was listening to her and I was like in a trance. I'm a bit tired, but it was a good trance. And I was taking a lot of what she was talking about in. She's very well-versed. She's very knowledgeable in areas that I am not. But with the tarot, I loved how she was addressing the ones in the beginning. But more importantly, you know, I've gone on about this, like I go on a lot about things, but I'm a big union. Carl Jung is, he's my pal, even though he's not here. But, did you know, and when she brought up Alcoholic Anonymous, which I'm very familiar with because of my father, so I have spent much time with that. But did you know, a lot of people don't know this, but about Bill W., who was the co-founder of Alcoholic Anonymous, wrote a letter to, in 1961, wrote a letter to Carl Jung. And it described a chain of events that changed Bill, the founder of AA's life, and influenced the spiritual emphasis of AA. So Carl Jung played the key role in how that whole program works because he brought the spiritual, and it all there's more to the story. But I loved how she touched on that little I don't know if everybody else remembers the way, but she did bring it up about the law. You're talking about, I think, the attraction, law of attraction, and she then indicated and correlated or reflected upon AA. Do you remember, Steve?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so it was incredible because it all comes to Bill W., who was a co-founder. It all started like in 1931, but he had this man named Roland. He was an extremely gifted businessman, very wealthy, who was at his wit's end. Treatment wasn't helping him anyway before Alcoholic Anonymous was formed. Anyway, he went and saw Jung, and he said, "You need to," he says, "I'm open for anything," this guy, Roland, said. He goes, "You need to connect spiritually." And everybody, what does that have to do with it, So it goes on and on. And what happened was later on, Bill, the co-founder, was also an alcoholic, and he was a goner, and he contacted Carl Jung again, and he said, "You need to have some spiritual experience." He goes, "What's that?" He goes, "Just focus on the light, the white light." And Bill W. had this incredible experience, and he spoke about it, and that is what really that started the whole course of the AA and how the make restitution, that and the spiritual part of it, and that's where it all worked, just because it's a direct reflection of Carl Jung. So I thought I might add. I'm just wanting to say.
Wonderful. No, it's wonderful, Maureen. You've got a lot of knowledge. Yeah. You really have.
Yeah, but she was fantastic, Stephen. Like I said, bring her back. I feel, for a whole thing on tarot, it'd be great.
Yeah. And Maureen, what I really like about her is she is really knowledgeable, academically on the subject. I love people that speak academically on the subject of metaphysics, and you have a lot of knowledge. I know that Brenda and Stephen do as well. I like the science of it, the truth of it, rather than the fluff. And I love that Ali is able to really explain the history and give us these famous names of people that were heavily involved. And I really like her academic approach to it. But the thing I really appreciate, Maureen, is the message that we hear so rarely, which is, if you want to heighten your metaphysical ability. If our listeners, if anyone out there wants to heighten their alchemical ability, their ability to manifest things in the world, the key to it is spiritual purification. Mm-hmm. And the truth of it is all of these things that we do manifest, we give away. Mm-hmm. Because it's like a game of Monopoly. Everything you accumulate, everything that you manifest, it all goes back in the box if it's material.
Yes.
We pass to spirit, we continue our growth, and we continue serving. But all the material stuff, the, you know, the house, the car, the laptop, the books, the money, it goes back in the box. It's not ours. It belongs to God. It belongs to the world. And all we take with us is our growth.
Yeah, you know,
except for vintage clothing.
Are you going to take that with you?
And the shoes, and Brenda, and the shoes. Let's not forget
the shoes and the vintage clothing have to go with me.
You know, Steve, what you said, you said something that it was interesting because you know you brought that up about your financial in things, and there's a saying, I forget how it goes, something like, a man was a rich man, or did he lived a rich life?
Yes,
and that's the thing. It's very true.
Well, I have a client, Maureen, who is a billionaire, an incredibly successful man in material terms. And I like to use shock tactics on clients at times to wake them up, because this is a man that's materially very wealthy, but spiritually very poor. And I said to him, you know, I feel it's my role to help you become as wealthy as I am. And as wealthy as spiritual people are, not saying I'm perfect by any means, but it's my role to help you see through all this materialism so that you can be truly happy. And I felt that was an important message.
Yes, it is. It's hard to really feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a journey.
I've done it. I know your dad was incredibly successful materially, and I know that he's a wonderful man as well. But I spent years working so hard to accumulate material things that I thought would impress people and give me some kind of status, and I realized it was just meaningless bullshit.
That's why my
Unless
father's an alcoholic.
It's used to serve people.
Yes. That's true, and I agree with that, and that's why I came out okay being around a lot of money, because my father didn't think he was any better than anybody else,
nope,
ever.
All the same, all the same.
Then again, I'd like to pay my bills. I really liked it. She touched, like I said, I was kind of trancing. She was articulating, absolutely fantastic. She articulated.
Yeah, she's a truly wonderful person, like you, Maureen, like you.
Oh, thank you.
Talking of wonderful people, well, I know your dad is as well, and I know that he watches over you, Maureen. I don't know why. We never normally do this, but I'm very drawn to the month of September. I'm drawn to the middle of September. I feel like the middle of September is really meaningful for your dad. There's something really special about that time. But anyway, I want to ask Stephen, who I know is a big reader. He loves to read for people, and he loves to consume books. What did you think?
Yes. Oh, I got that. You know, when you read texts on mysticism, you develop a sense for what is good and what is bad. It's sort of like when you ding Waterford crystal. You know, connoisseurs of fine Waterford crystal recognize that telltale ding. And when I listen to a lecturer on the metaphysical topics, I'm keeping an ear out for that telltale ding as well. And I heard it tonight, big time, from this guest. Big time. She gave me goosebumps a lot. She lectured on a topic that's near and dear to my heart. I left the Thoth deck behind, which is an absolutely wonderful, wonderful deck, to study this Egyptian tarot that she spoke about so intelligently tonight. And it's absolutely an amazing system of tarot that solved a lot of logical problems that other decks have. For instance, what to do with the court cards. For instance, how to deal with reversed cards. And that deck makes a lot of really interesting innovations with the tarot. And it's all very logical.
And Stephen, remind me, The Church of Light has only two cards that are interpreted reversed. Can
right.
you remember what yes. which they are?
Absolutely. They are
I knew
the
it. You asshole.
The
Sorry.
Sorry. I was the guy who always killed the test, the exam curve in college. Okay, so everybody hated my guts. But it's the it's Trump number 12, the martyr. So upright, he represents sacrifice, giving up stuff.
Yes.
Reversed, he represents getting those sacrifices paid off because his coins are falling back into his pockets. That's how I always remember that one. And the other one is Trump number 22, which combines Trump Zero, the Fool. Egyptian tarot has no Trump Zero. It begins with Trump One, the Magus. So Trump, the final major arcanum card, combines the Zero of the Fool, and that's what you get with the reversed orientation of the card. And upright is the spiritualist. So reversed is it represents folly, materialism. Upright, it represents cooperation and spiritual values. So one thing
two
that I
polar opposites, right? Exactly that point we were talking about before.
Right, two polar opposites. In all other cases, the reversed orientation merely represents the fact that the energies of that card are not as strong as it could be, either due to the cycle beginning or ending. You know, it doesn't really represent a nullification or negation of the card's meaning or a reversal of the card's meaning. But with reversals, what I found is that it's just only important to decide whether or not you're going to use them, period, before you lay down the cards. You know, you got to hammer all those questions out for yourself. But listening to your guest tonight, I was thinking about alchemy and also thinking of another concept I read about lately called cognitive surplus. And I read that future, I've read a
you
prediction.
Haven't got any of that, Stephen, have you? Let's well, be honest. You struggle. I'm only joking. You're one of the smartest people I've ever met.
I'm always reading so much. I mean, the interesting thing was that I read this prediction that future societies will actually obligate people to contribute their cognitive surplus via social media. When you look on someone's timeline and you see all their posts of, you know, recipes or recirculating flyers of missing kids or, you know, cute pictures of cats with captions, you know, all of this stuff represents that person's cognitive surplus. And
I'm sick of seeing what people are having for dinner. I don't care. Do you know what really makes me laugh? What my bugbear at the moment, Steve, I don't use Facebook very much. I'm not much of a Facebook user. But what really is pissing me off is that when I go on Facebook and I say something that I think is really profound, like it's something that I think is really important, you know, I'll make a comment
Nobody
about
cares.
What's happening in Syria and no one likes it. And then I could go on the next day and say, I've just eaten a really nice cake and everybody's liking it.
Right.
And I just think I almost want to put a message on there and say, why are none of you responding to what's really important? If I put this mundane nonsense about what I had for dinner or a picture of what my cat everyone loves it and it gets lots of attention. But if I say something that I think is really important, it's just like, whew.
Yeah, nobody cares, right? I know. It's sad. It is sad.
I think we have a call. I have a caller.
We've got a call. Yeah, we have. Sorry, I lost track.
Unpopular.
I was excited. We haven't picked Brenda's brain, so hopefully we'll have a little bit of time to do that later. But yes, Maureen, you have a call from New York. Go ahead.
Hello, New York.
Hi.
Hi, what's your name? Please.
So, I have a question.
Okay.
So, I started a job on Monday, and there's me and 11 others who are in training. And I do get the feeling, actually, that they're learning a lot faster than I am, which I guess I'm not surprised because I don't learn that quickly. But I'm also wondering how this training is going to go for me and if I'm going to, like, actually get the job, or if I'm gonna if they're gonna tell me to.
I gotcha. You're curious about if it's gonna move forward, or I understand. You know, what's your name, please?
Anne.
Hi, Anne. Yeah, well, Anne, this is what I'm getting. You know, my feeling is you the last place you were at was complete havoc. I mean, just in commotion, last location.
You mean the last place I worked?
Yeah. And
I don't remember the last place I worked.
Right. Well, I was just touching base on that because I'm getting to a situation here. Well, it looks like there was some changes down, something, it was commotion. So what my feeling is, what I'm seeing is, I don't feel that you're giving yourself much credit about how you're not catching on so fast. My feeling is, and what I'm seeing is that you are very much, your personal power is extremely intact. And so and like I said, the reason I brought up a little bit of the past or wherever you were before or whatever you experienced before, it's not going to be the same. I feel that I feel that where you're at right now, you're very empowered, and I see you being very strong in this training situation amongst everybody else. There is something going on around this company or business, I don't know exactly what it is, but it does appear like there's some stress that's coming up along the avenue there, and it looks like you're going to be carrying. I see you there. I see you following through. Even more so, you're always willing to take on all the burden, which in some ways that can be very dysfunctional for you, but you work very hard, harder than anybody else, and it's almost like you're a very loyal person. And I do see you being there, and I also feel that you're going, this is within the next 4 months, and I'm just giving you what I'm seeing right now. I feel that you're going to have another opportunity as well offered to you, but it will be through being at this place or the training that'll be very positive. So, actually, I see you being compensated very well. I see you and somebody else, the two of you. So you may be feeling like the underdog, or you're not doing as well. But in fact, I see otherwise. I really feel this is a great opportunity that will lead into even a better opportunity to go to another area of the company or department or subsidiary, something of that nature within 4 months. It's very good.
Okay, I'm actually supposed to pass a test after I go through the training. Do you see me passing the test?
Yeah, I absolutely do see you passing. Like I said, your personal power is so strong. And you may not be feeling such right now. However, I see it, you know, within the weeks ahead. Yes, absolutely. I can't tell you. You need to believe it. What I guess I'm trying to say to you is, you underestimate yourself. Really, you underestimate yourself. You have a lot going on, and you can absorb a lot. In fact, more so than anybody else. It's just you hang on to grab hold of your confidence. Okay. Really, you can accomplish a lot. You're doing well. You're a smart woman.
When you said I have a lot of personal power, what do you mean by personal power?
Meaning that you can, we were talking about this earlier, it manifest. You're able to pull everything from above and bring it into your physical world. You will pass that test if you believe that you can. It's not just going to be harder for you than anybody else, but I feel that you just are lacking a bit in confidence. So I see you being very grounded and being able to, if you want to, there's no doubt about it, you're just as smart as anybody else. I see you being able to absorb it. You're very grounded, or where you're heading, very grounded.
So you're saying, in other words, like I can actually manifest my wishes, even like just not in terms of it, just in general, I have the power to manifest my wishes?
Yeah, no, not just wishes. You have the power to do it. We all do. You know what? You're a smart woman. I feel that you don't see yourself as smart as you've even indicated it. But that's not the case. What I'm seeing is that you are empowered. But you need – I don't want to tell you what you need to. I encourage you to focus on your abilities, which are fine, and they're good, and they're great. And be okay with that and accept it. I just feel that it's coming from some past stuff probably that it was never reflected to you or people perceived you, whatever. That doesn't matter. The thing is, you are very strong, and I also feel that you will do very well, but you kind of feel otherwise. So I just want you to know that I see you being capable of doing very well, but it's up to you. I hope you make the choice to know that that is the case. Really.
Okay, all right. Thank you for helping.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Anne.
Bye.
Thank you, Maureen. Well, we have another caller from Illinois for Stephen.
Hello, who am I speaking with?
My name is Tammy.
Tammy?
Yes.
Okay, well, how may I help you this evening? What's on your mind?
I have a situation where I've known a man for 14 years. And I ran back into him recently after not seeing him for 6 years. And I want to know if we're headed for a romantic relationship.
Ah, okay. One second while I pick up on this. Are they headed for a romantic relationship? Okay. Yes, you are definitely on the track for a romantic relationship. I do see that that's in the cards. However, it's not guaranteed, unfortunately. It's not guaranteed. I see the major forward action of this relationship happening in the winter time, upcoming winter of 2013, 2014. That's when the major events will start happening. And I believe, in fact, I'm pretty sure that the relationship will form under an atmosphere of some sort of a hardship. So it's the picture I'm getting here is that the two of you will seek each other out romantically due to some hardship that one or the other, or maybe even both of you are having. That you see.
It is so both. We are both still legally married to others.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand you.
I said it would be both of us because we're both still legally married to others.
Well, you know, the legalities of marriage are what they, you know, being what they are. People get separated all the time and, you know, form couples before divorces go through. And I see the winter time as the beginning of the traction happening on that issue. Now, the hardship that I'm seeing could quite well, it could manifest in a certain number of ways. Sickness, you know, work problems. But more than likely, it'll probably be one or the other of you getting sick of the stagnant situation, just ready to bring the situation to a head. You know, sort of a something's got to give. Because what I do see in the upcoming months after is a great deal of sacrifice, monetary sacrifice as well, made on the part of one or the other of you. And the way I interpret this is the monetary sacrifice would be the divorce itself, you know, splitting up property, doing things of that nature. Do you see?
Correct.
So I definitely see the relationship forming, but again, it's quite optional right now. Either way, I mean, if you choose to have this relationship, then you will have that option available to you. In other words, you don't have to, and it's something that you have to claim. You can ignore it and not have a relationship with the guy if you like, or if you want it, you'll have that option to do it. But I'm not guaranteeing that will happen.
It will be definitely going for it.
Now, oh, okay. It sounds like you want it a lot, so if you do want it, you'll have that option.
Yes. When do you see both of us filing for divorce?
I see that in the winter time, going into the spring of 2014.
Okay. And when do you think that he will start opening up and telling me how he really feels?
It's definitely going to be springtime of 2014. Right around that period is going to be the more, you know, magical type of, that's when the magic of the romance will happen. And certainly by summer of 2014, I see a lot of activity between the two of you, like a lot of dates. A lot of music, a lot of art, a lot of drama, a lot of fun stuff like that.
Okay.
So it's going to be a gradual process, Tammy. You wouldn't want to expect or get your hopes up for a rapid transition. You know what I'm saying? We're talking winter, springtime of 2014.
Correct. There's a lot to accomplish by then. When do you see moving on to the home I'm in?
Yeah, well, you know, by winter, certainly, you'll start getting some relief on this. So, you see, by winter, you'll definitely start seeing things start to happen the way you want it to happen.
Okay. You think I'll wait till then to move out?
Well, absolutely. I believe there's going to be a separation. So, either he's going to move or she's going to move, one of the two. Separation will probably happen around the winter time, and the filings for divorce will probably happen later that spring or maybe even that summer.
Do you think he could go long term?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand you, madam.
Do you think the relationship could go long term?
Absolutely. It has definite long term potential. There's some cosmic energy at work between you two. This isn't always the case, but I sense quite a bit of cosmic energy, energies of destiny and fate that are intertwining here between you and he.
I believe that 100%. I think it goes probably no matter.
Well, this definitely is not one of these unimportant relationships. There's a reason that the two of you are going through this right now. It's something that's important for both of your spiritual development.
Okay.
So
that's how I feel.
The energies between you. Ma'am?
It sounds very wonderful.
Oh, okay. Well, is there anything else I can help you with this evening? Did that answer your question?
I can throw in there. My daughter's pregnant. Is she going to have a boy or girl?
I'm sorry, you asked something about your daughter?
Yeah, she's pregnant. Is she going to have a boy or a girl?
One second. I'm going to have to pick up on that one. One second while I pick up on your daughter here. Will she have a boy or a girl? First of all, let's ask, will she have a boy? Congratulations, by the way, on your daughter being pregnant. That's lovely.
Yes, it's the first one. It's wonderful.
Yeah, that's great. I wouldn't dare call you a grandmother, though, even though your daughter's having a baby. You sound way too young to be a grandmother.
No,
right?
I'm not.
We're not going to go there. Well, first of all, let's see here. Is she going to have a baby boy? One second while I pick up on this, please. And the answer, no, it's looking like she's going to have a girl, a little baby girl. Congratulations.
That would be wonderful. That would be wonderful.
Okay, well,
wonderful.
I really
so
appreciate it. Thank you for calling. Come visit us at psychicaccess.com, okay?
Will do.
All
Thank
right,
you.
Good night, Tammy.
Good night.
Thank you, Stephen. That was a great reading.
My pleasure, Steve.
Wonderful, wonderful. I do want to remind all of our listeners, I know that they have lots of questions and we love spending time with them, but it's one question per caller because we have people calling and only a certain amount of time for each caller. And for all of you listening as well, remember that if you do have more questions, if you want to go into additional detail, you can contact any one of us at psychicaccess.com. And if you haven't joined before, then you're entitled to a free 6-minute reading. And we can get quite a lot done in 6 minutes. So do feel free to contact us. But if you're calling in for the radio show, it's one question. Okay, I do want to go back for a moment, actually, to Brenda, because I didn't get a chance to ask Brenda what she thought about the interview and Ali's comments on alchemy and tarot.
Well, you know, I listened to the whole thing, and of course, I'm always going to focus on certain things. I loved what she was talking about in regards to transmuting, and that's on all levels, not just, you know, the lead to gold, that physical realm. And then I really loved the stuff that she talked about Thoth. I refer to him as Tehuti, the first Egyptian high priest. And so, you know, it was, to me, you know, that it always just brings it back, you know, to those people. Where did they come from? And they say that Thoth or Tehuti was a god, or he was a man that came from another land. And to me, it makes a lot of sense because they had so much knowledge. And even now, it seems like society is like digressing. We're forgetting more and more, and when we should really be studying the knowledge of those ancients, because it came to them from another world. That's what I firmly believe. And it educated them. And they're wise men. We don't have in the priesthoods today anything that even compares to the knowledge of the priesthood of ancient Egypt or any of the other ancient society priesthoods, because they studied such a wide variety of all the sciences, because to them it was interconnected. You know, don't you agree?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's what I loved about Ali, because she really worked to connect us with the alchemy of the past and the spiritual purification of now, and even tarot. It is. It really is. It's fascinating, Brenda. And we do have a caller for you, actually, Brenda, from
Missouri.
Okay. Missouri, yes. So go ahead.
Hi, Missouri. How can I help you this evening?
Hello, I have a question. This is about, like, my career. And I did the class. I know if I passed. I want to know if I passed this year better. And I want to know about me applying to dental school. Will it be worth it?
Okay, can you speak up just a little bit louder?
Yeah, I'm actually in the basement. I'll walk out so you can hear me.
Okay.
Okay, so I took the class, and I wanted to know if I passed or not. With this year better, and then my other question would be, should I apply to dental school this summer? Like, will I get in?
Okay, let's take a peek. Let's take a peek here. It looks like you got a good score on this test. It looks like you passed it. It really does. When are you supposed to find out?
August 9th.
Yeah. You're going to receive good news. And through this good news, because waiting has been an agony. You've been thinking all kinds of scenarios in your mind, like, oh, God, if I don't do this, how am I going to make my next step, blah, blah, blah. But what I'm seeing is I'm seeing that through passing this, a pathway is going to be open to you for some finances. And once that comes together, it looks like you're wide open to get into the dental school that you'd like. That's what I see. It does kind of hinge on, you know, passing the test and getting a good score and all of that. You've got a lot of people around you that are very encouraging. I see new beginnings, especially in the area of, you know, groups of friends and family. There is some envy around you amongst your friends, and maybe just because they're not doing anything with their lives and you're moving forward, even though it's taken great sacrifice, is what I see. So if your question to me is if you're going to get into the dental school and what's going to happen there, you know, it's a change and it's a big change, and I feel that there's even a distance that you're going to have to go for this.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's what I see. Yeah. Is the dental school out of the area?
It's in Missouri.
Okay. But it's not near your home, right?
I'll at least travel to, three or 4 hours, but there's two dental schools in Missouri, so...
Well, you're going to receive good news. I see you receiving good news within the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Uh-huh. Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you, Brenda. Great reading. And we have a call from Florida now, and I will take this one. Who's calling from Florida? Hello, Florida?
Hi.
Hi, what's your name?
Ebony.
Sorry, your name is?
Ebony.
Ebony, what a beautiful name. Ebony, how can I help?
I was worried, like, wondering about my job. I put, like my job, I've been at my job for 3 years, and I was just wondering how much longer will I be there, because I really don't like it.
Yeah, okay, well, I'm going to be pretty quick for you. I feel as though it is the energy is clear. You are really done with this, and you've felt this way for quite some time. It feels like about 5 months that you've really felt strongly that it's time to walk away, time to move forward. And I feel that right now, because you've been feeling that way for some time, you feel frustrated, and there's tension. I was going to use the word conflict, but I wouldn't use that word. I'd say more that it feels tense, that you feel tense in that work environment, and that you really want to move on, that you don't feel that there are good opportunities for you there, that you feel that your time has run out there, and you feel as well that you're just not happy in that environment. I know as well that you are concerned about money, that you want to move to an opportunity that makes you feel more appreciated, more rewarded. So I do feel that you'll move forward. I do feel that you'll get an opportunity that enables you to do what you're far more passionate about. I do feel as well, though, from what my guides say, that you need to let go of the tension. You feel a little let down, a little disappointed, a little angry even about the way it's unfolded there. You need to let go of it. You need to take away from that experience the lessons that are really valuable to you and use those lessons to get really clear about your way forward. I don't feel that you're going to leave straight away. I feel like you've got to be a little patient. I feel that you will move by the month of April. So it feels like about 9 more months in that role. And my guides are saying to you, if you can be really clear what you've learned, how it's served you, how it's been valuable, be very clear about the direction you want to take moving forward, you will be done with it, you will have a great opportunity, and you will move in 9 months' time.
I will move in 9 months' time.
Yes, it is not as quickly as you would like, but you will be pleased by the opportunity that comes your way. And my guides are saying to you, learn to enjoy the journey. Don't frustrate yourself or be upset or tortured by the fact it's taking a number of months. Enjoy and be excited about the future. You will move. It's just not straight away.
But I will move from out of the city I'm in now, right? Is that what you're saying?
Out of the city, did you say?
Okay.
No, I meant you'll move from the role. Are you asking me now if you'll change locations as well?
Oh. Yes. I keep being told I'm going to be pregnant, and I'm not excited about that because I don't want any more children. I have a little son already,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of frustrating. Because everyone keeps saying, you're going to have a baby. And I'm like, no, no.
I don't feel that you're going to have another baby. I don't feel that you're going to move to a different location. I just feel that you'll change roles, that you've fallen out of love with what you're doing, and you need to move forward to a new opportunity. And it feels to me that it happens in about 9 months, but that your challenge is to make sure that you don't just drive yourself nuts in the meantime. You know, you can choose. It's going to take you about 8-9 months to transition. You can decide, do you want to make that time really miserable? Or do you want to enjoy it? Because no matter where we are in life, there's always something else we're looking to create or be or achieve. And we need to enjoy where we are now. We need to enjoy the journey. But you will move. And I feel very strongly drawn to April of next year.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
You're welcome. Wish you lots of luck and thank you for calling.
You're welcome, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Well, I want to come back to...
Well, we have another caller, I think.
Oh, we do already? Wow, okay. Let me see. Well, oh, we call caller from you, Maureen, from New Jersey, right?
Yeah, caller from me. I'm in New Jersey. Call myself.
Go ahead.
Hi, New Jersey.
Great. And go ahead. One question, though, New Jersey. One question.
One question. Thank you, Steve. Hello, New Jersey.
Hello.
Hi. What's your name, please?
Debbie.
Hi, Debbie. What can I help you with?
I get one question, right?
Yes. My time.
Okay, yeah. I'm just wondering when I'm going to get, like, a real job opportunity.
Okay. Okay, I want to ask you this. Are you out looking and applying yourself for a new job opportunity at this time?
Yeah.
Actively looking? So the reason I'm asking... It's because it will have everything to do with how much I can help you in the short period of time that we have. Because it looks like you really look like you're physically up for it, and emotionally, after going through some intense times. So that's why I'm asking you: have you been going out and looking on, you know, certain ones that you really
online,
want?
Online, sending interviews on Monster, all those things, yep.
Oh, so you're going full. Great. It's very positive, and it looks like you've come through with some hard internalizing. You've done the work, I call it. Yes, you know, I absolutely do. I do absolutely see around. Now, I'm not saying you're not going to get any offers. Well, we're almost to August. What am I saying? August is what I'm seeing. I'm also seeing. Maybe there's a change of residence, or you might be redoing the way your home looks of some sort. It's extremely positive. And I do feel that right now, even though you've come through, like, oh boy, you've done some, like I said, you've gone through some intense stuff internally, worked it through after many years. And even though you may be fearful of, it's almost like having the fear of not having funds and for things, you're going to do fine. And not only that, I feel that you're going to get exactly what you want. It's not like you're going to be, I don't see you taking any, you're going to get several offers. And like I said, it may be, are you willing to relocate?
No.
Okay, that's fine. Even if it was really, well, it does, like I said, I do see something around your home. It's just maybe just moving not that far away, but it's so positive.
Unless I hit the lottery. My husband makes a lot more money than I'm capable of.
It's not about the lottery, but maybe you'll redo it. It just, there's a new beginnings, and there's so much warmth, and there's been a lot of unfairness surrounding you in the past many years, unjust things, and I do feel that you're really in a good, like, after going through all the stuff that you've gone through, you're really able to rise up to the occasion. I see there's no more stagnation where you're heading in your work or career. You're heading in a great positive direction, absolutely, and you've emotionally are ready, and you're going to thrive very well, and then later on you can deal with your relationship stuff later. But but I do feel there's going to be two opportunities that are going to be coming your way, at least two. So, it's very good. And I do see, it looks like by the third week of August, this will be in place. I could be off, but okay. By the third week, if not sooner, within 3 weeks.
Okay.
Okay, Debbie, I hope I helped you.
You sound like you want to tell me more. I don't know.
Well, it's hard. I'm on this, our time is limited. I always want to tell everybody more, but I'm not able to. But you can reach all of us at psychicactus.com. If you'd like to, actually all new people get a free reading, a 6-minute reading. So you might want to check us, all of us co-hosts are, and there's great psychics over there, as well as us, Okay, thank you for calling, Debbie. Have a good evening.
Thank you. You too.
Oh, bye-bye.
Thank you, Maureen. Great reading. Love it. Okay, so, Stephen, you have a caller from Iowa.
Thank you, Steve. Iowa. Who am I speaking with in Iowa?
Hi, this is Laura.
Laura, thank you for calling. How may I help you this evening?
Well, I'm curious if I'm ever going to get remarried, find love, have a family. Who do you see me with?
Ah, 1 second. Let me pick up on that energy. Will you ever get married, find love again, do it the right way? Yes, absolutely. And I want to know why on earth you thought it would never happen again. God's definitely not going to give future. You strike me as a young person. You still have a lot of romance in you, a lot of life, fertility, whatever the case may be. You still have a lot of that left in you. And everything I see here points towards another serious love, points towards another significant relationship. Do you see?
Okay.
There are, however, some flies in the ointment, because you'll carry with you some of the same kinks and baggage and problems to the next relationship that you bring with you to some of the relationships that floundered and failed in the past. So if I have to urge you along any lines whatsoever, it's to look over what it is that you can do to make your relationships better. Because one thing I see is a tendency to look back, a tendency to go over past mistakes or past blunders of your partner, things of that nature. And I'm really getting, that's really sticking out, this capacity for looking back and having a regret or a remorse of some sort. And so that's to be avoided. You'll get to where you want to go with your love life much faster if you can stop this looking back. You know, we see what happened to Lot's wife when she looked back on the burning city of Sodom. She turned into a pillar of salt. And therefore, you don't want to have a paralysis. A pillar of salt isn't very mobile. It's not very flexible. And the reason that paralysis comes is from the action of looking back and regretting having remorse for past mistakes or someone else's past mistakes. If you can avoid that, then you're definitely on track for a soulmate type of relationship in the future. Something that's going to definitely represent a new chapter in your life.
Okay. I mean, is this going to be long term, like down the road a ways soon?
Well, the timeline on that, you can do things to speed it up or you can do things to slow it down. One of the things you can do to speed it up is to just always be forward looking in terms of having a better attitude about the relationship that is to come. You know, always just try to watch your attitude. You know, you can make things happen in your life through two actions: directing your thinking, in other words, visualizing what you want, and also inducing your emotions, which is sort of manufacturing the proper emotional atmosphere in your life to attract that true love, which is basically just not allowing yourself to be down all the time or not allowing yourself to be negative about your chances. I'm telling you right now, you're guaranteed to find a significant relationship again. The only question is, are you going to be able to handle the responsibility of that? That's the only question that's important here. As to whether or not you will have this, certainly you will. Absolutely. Will
well,
it be,
I'm very positive and open-minded, and actually I've had people say I'm very easy to love. I just, like, how do I don't know. I've got someone that's head over heels, and he's wonderful, but he's also way too old for me. You know, and so it's like, oh, boy. You know, he treats me like gold. But then there's...
You know, there's an old saying, well begun is half done, you know, and you want to make sure that when you, that the romantic choices you make in the beginning are sound and that you're not sabotaging your chances for future success. Okay. And I know, you know, relationships with men who are older than you, that's not bad. You know, a lot of people are doing that, but you have to answer, you have to ask yourself, you know, am I sabotaging my future chances with this man? Is it going to be a problem, you know, down the road? You have to analyze the actual number of years that are separating you two and determine whether or not that'll be a problem. If the guy's only a decade, decade and a half older, I don't see that as being a significant problem. But if he's two decades, three decades older, you know, then there could be some problems later on down the line.
Right.
You know. You have to.
And that's one thing I've learned. I'm constantly learning and evolving, and that's one thing I have learned from this process is that, right, what you just said. I'm only going to date people that I would fit as a partner in the future, anyways.
You're clever in addition to being very lovable. So you'll definitely get it figured out here, without a doubt. Yeah, and I see you're going to have ample opportunities, ample chances to do it right. So you can relax. You don't have to do it perfectly every time. You're going to get lots of chances, okay?
Thank you very much.
Oh, well, I certainly hope that's helped you to have some confidence about your future abilities. No need to worry, right?
I feel very confident. It's just, I wonder when it's going to happen. You know, I kind of feel like some things are brewing in my life, and just wondering if that's what's taking place or if
it's
not.
I see the main image. The main energy is going to be taking place in springtime of 2014. So anything that happens between now and then, if it, something develops out of it, man, that's a bonus. But I wouldn't expect anything significant until the springtime. Right, it's in fact maybe even June of 2014. So,
okay, very good.
And then I see something major happening, so it's worth waiting for.
Excellent, thank you.
Laura, thank you very much for calling me tonight. I hope you'll come visit us at psychicaccess.com.
I certainly will, thank you. Bye-bye.
Very well, good night.
Thank you, Stephen. Great reading. Well, I want to just go back to Brenda for a moment because I'm conscious that I didn't ask Brenda enough about the interview. I know she has an enormous amount of knowledge on tarot and spirituality. So, Brenda, tell me more. I'd like to ask you more about the connection with Egypt, actually.
Go ahead. Ask me. What would you like to know?
I don't know. I'm just making it up and was hoping you'd come up with something great.
Well, you know...
Just say something great
when you
about
go,
Egypt.
And I know you're going. I know when you go, and I know you're going.
You do know I'm going, don't you? I am going. Do you think I'm going next year?
Well, I'm going next year. I know you're going, but I don't know if we're going together. But I know you're going.
I want to go. I do want to go.
But a lot of the key to Tahuti or Thoth, and I always call them Tahuti because I like to call them by the original names, not the Greek name, which is Thoth, is the pyramids. And inside the pyramid, and you'll see, you know, his whole concept as it, because it's it, the pyramids themselves are a reflection to that whole concept of as it is above, so it is below, because each one of the pyramids reflect a stage of humankind's development. You have the small one, which is the physical. You have the middle pyramid, which is the emotional body, and then you have the spiritual body as the grand pyramid, though inside it repeats those three levels within it. You know, and she talked a little bit about the chamber that led from the small pyramid to the Sphinx paws. That does exist. What was there, you know, as far as like the, you know, secret library in Emerald Tablets is probably not there anymore. That's been closed off, but I know for a fact that in the small pyramid there is a, and if you have a really good guide, they will take you to the small pyramid. There's not much you can see. It's very close in there. So if you're claustrophobic, you know, buck it up. Cause, you know, I don't care about that. I just want to go in there, you know, even if I have to crawl on my knees, which in some places you might have to. But there is a passageway that's blocked that goes towards the Sphinx. So.
Wow.
Yeah, it's, this stuff is not made up. It's real. And the initiates went through those initiations to, you know, gain their, you know, well, they had a choice by the time they were in the Grand Pyramid if they were going to stay on Earth or they were going to become, you know, an enlightened being. And, you know, it had everything to do with their own, and you mentioned their purification within themselves. If they weren't completely purified, you know, mind, body, and spirit, then they had to repeat their lessons on Earth. And they did become teachers. They served in the priesthood. But some of them, they would go, when the priests came to that sarcophagus in the king's chamber, which was the final place of their initiation, it wasn't unusual for them to find just an empty body, and the soul had left. Soul had lifted from it.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
It's very fascinating. And when you go, and I'm saying when, because I know you're going to, you must lay down in that sarcophagus because you will have a spontaneous out-of-body experience. You will.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Sounds great. Sounds really good. I really feel that I need to go, so you're spot on. I really feel like it's time for me to get out there and learn.
Yeah. And amidst all this chaos and amidst all the, you know, the poverty and everything that's going on in Egypt, the temples vibrate with an energy that's eternal. There's nothing that can push it down. There's nothing. It's amazing.
It is. It really is. So. You've got a lot of knowledge about Egypt as well as metaphysics, Brenda, so thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Well, brings us to the end of another great show. I want to just thank everybody for listening in. Remember that you can join us every week at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, and we love having you with us. I want to thank Doug for keeping us on track as our executive producer behind the scenes. And thank you to you, Maureen, and Brenda, and Stephen. I can't remember off the top of my head who's hosting the show next week, so whoever is, speak up.
That'll be myself.
Ah, what do you have planned?
Yes, we're going to look at the astrology of all this strange weather we've been having lately. We're going to have the Reverend Charlene Hicks, uh-huh, a psychic medium and astrologer who predicted the calamities in Japan, talking about the tsunami. And she's going to have a lot to say about the influence of astrology on this strange weather we've been having.
Yes, and so, it has been strange all around the world. I've lived,
yes,
in Tennessee for 5 years, Stephen. I've never seen so much rain in my life.
Yeah, it's really, really crazy. We've got a grand trine in all the watery elements with some big heavy-duty planets there. So the basic nutshell message of next week's show is there's going to be a lot of water. Yeah. A lot
she's
of water.
A great guest. She's a really very knowledgeable, wonderful astrologer, so good choice. Good. Well, I'm going to say goodbye to everybody. Hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Thank you for listening. Remember to join us 8 o'clock Eastern Time and tell your friends and family. All of the archives are on the website. And I will hand over to my co-host to say their goodbyes.
Good evening, everybody.
Bye.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.